Okay, so maybe there's some questions or comments. Yeah.
This has so come full circle from sitting at NIC, and I come crying into the room about global warming, and you look at me with a different passion and go, maybe we should have a retreat about this. So it's like, here we are, full circle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm walking through, and maybe, I hope this is helpful to everyone, not just me. So I'm walking through me, because I feel like you're talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I am, I'm just going to pick a topic and we could go through it.
Mm.
So I watch the melting of the Arctic and the drowning polar bears. Let's pick that one.
Mm-hmm.
National Geographic will come on, or some news about we're now getting the three polar bears, or I'm making it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I have a physical reaction. The sadness I feel out of our choices, mine too, not just, it's all of us making choices that are resulting in the suffering, in this case it's medicine issues or whatever, because of our choices. And so I feel that sadness, and I don't stop, but I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And so really taking what you just said from, yes, I do have the experience of my distress, of watching the disappearance of life forms that I connect with. Not being overwhelmed by that sadness,
mm-hmm.
and keeping moving,
mm-hmm.
and keep transforming it to what can I continue to do to help people and myself make decisions for the good of all life, and not get caught in the, God, this is so sad, watching mm-hmm. the disappearance one by one of the species. Am I missing something? Did I get it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're getting it. Okay. So you're sitting there, and the polar bear one, that's the one that really gets me too,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, so you see the polar bears drowning. Yeah. Now, I think here, when you were saying you feel the distress that because of our choices that this situation has come about. What I think, let's refine that a bit. Let's focus on what's it like to be a polar bear and drowned?
Oh.
Yeah? I mean, so we start feeling the suffering of the polar bears when they're drowning.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you think of human beings who are making these choices out of ignorance, who are not realizing the long-term effects of their actions. Whether it's us or others, you know, we make choices, we do things, we don't see the long-term effects of our actions. Sometimes even people try and point out our mistakes to us and we get defensive. Isn't that sad? You know, can we look at the human beings who are making those choices out of ignorance and have compassion for them too? Okay? So it's the compassion for the polar bears, and it's the compassion for the human beings. Yeah. I mean, if you talk to anybody and say, do you want to go kill a polar bear? They're not going to say yes. Yeah? I mean, if you go to any president of any company or, you know, anybody who wants to drill in the Arctic or, you know, or whatever, and say, do you want to go kill a polar bear? They're going to say, no, I don't want to kill a polar bear. Yeah. So what is it that our choice is? It's ignorance. It's the not seeing. Isn't it an incredible tragedy that we human beings have so much intelligence and yet we don't have the foresight to see the results of our actions? So can we have compassion for all of these human beings who are involved in causing this pain because of ignorance? Okay?
Which is all of us.
It's all of us.
It's our driving.
Yes.
It's our very existence. It's
yeah. Right. And that's actually, to take it a step further, even to do the work that we do as activists involves polluting the world to some extent. Because if we're going to, even coming here, you have to drive. If you're working with a fax machine in your home, you have electricity. Here our electricity comes from water. Many places in the country it comes from coal. Okay? So somehow our modern lifestyle is so involved with doing things that destroy the environment. And as much as we don't want to contribute to that, it happens. And we're not doing it deliberately. And, you know, I don't think the people who are making a lot of these policies and so forth are thinking that, you know, they don't want to harm anybody deliberately. They're just not seeing. Mm-hmm. And if we can realize how many ways in which we, in our own life, don't see the things that are detrimental for us. Hmm? Yeah. We come to a course, we hear about abandoning the 10 negative actions. What do? We go out and we create the 10 negative actions. Yeah. It's not just the CEOs and stockholders of these companies. You know, we also do things that, you know, other people are trying to help us and give us good tools to make our own life happier and our future lives happier, and we can't hear. And so I think having compassion, you know, for ourselves and our ignorance, for all sentient beings and their ignorance, for how, you know, the suffering comes about, everybody hurting everybody in some way, you know, because of this ignorance. And then saying ignorance can be eliminated. Okay? Ignorance can be eliminated. Why? Because it is based on flimsy evidence. It's based on incorrect evidence. So the ignorance can be eliminated. It can't be eliminated right at once. You know? It's going to take a while. So, okay, maybe we want to eliminate the ignorance of some of the people who are drilling in the Arctic or driving their cars for fun or whatever. We want to eliminate their ignorance. But think of the Buddhists and Bodhisattvas who are trying to eliminate our ignorance. You know? And we give them a pretty hard time. Yeah? Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are sitting there and saying, don't speak harsh words, it creates the cause of misery. What do? We say, shut up. We speak harsh words right back, you know? It's like, look at us. So if we get some feeling of our own ignorance and have some compassion for that, and some feeling about what the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are going through trying to help us, then we get some feeling of, okay, this is also the situation of human beings who are ignorant on a different level, this time about the environment. And, you know, just as others are trying to help me overcome my ignorance, and they're doing it with compassion, although I'm kicking and screaming the whole way, maybe I have to have some compassion and some ability to hang in there in the long term with whoever I'm trying to help. Because others are hanging in there in the long term with me, I should hang in there in the long term with others. Okay? Yeah. And then if we even think of, you know, go back, and let's go back to how we were raised. How many people raised us and hung in there with us when we were acting out and being completely obnoxious kids? You know? And who, our parents, whoever was taking care of us, they hung in there with us. Yeah, they could have said, look, you're a 7-year-old and you're too much, get out of here. But they didn't. They hung in there with us. Okay? So I think if we look for examples of people who didn't give up on us, then that gives us some strength to not give up on others. And like I was saying, even about our teachers in school, you know, they taught us the whole grade. I remember when I was teaching, I had some kids that were so difficult. But you just hang in there, you know. So just think of, you know, what other people have done for us to help. And use that as an example to make our own minds strong. You know, because compassion needs to be strong. Compassion makes our mind incredibly strong. Because we see that we've been the recipient of kindness. And we know we have to hang in there if we're ever going to do anything of any worth and benefit for anybody. Because we realize that things take time. You know, even learning to type, it takes time. Learning to drive a car, it takes time. Anything takes time. Yeah. So I think, you know, that this ability to just, you know, let go of, we hold out the long-term aim, but we let go of wanting instant gratification and let the doing be the gratification and the delight. Mm-hmm. Okay? And not get stuck in, you know, in just feeling the suffering. But let the suffering be a motivator for us to act. And I really see with His Holiness, you know, just in small ways, like a couple of times when I've gone kind of Him whining about something or another being difficult. And He turns right around and He says, "That's exactly the reason why you should persist." You know, He says, "You should study harder. You should try harder." You know, I'm sitting here, you know, this is hard. I feel inadequate. He says, "That's why you should try harder." You know? So that's not the answer that my ego necessarily wants to hear, but it's the answer I need. You know, it's the answer I need. So you see how compassion is not necessarily giving other people what they want, but it's giving them what is good for them? Huh? So it's like that. Yeah?
I think I heard in Nancy's question also that it's not that we know all about the global climate change issue ourselves, but we know we aren't ignorant of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we continue, we aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to do some of the things that harm the earth, even though we know better. And it sounds like you answered that in saying that we are evolving, and maybe we just haven't gotten there yet. So be patient with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and with others who we know are in the same situation. They know better, but they're not there yet.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this is a good point, how you're saying that even we know about the environment, yet we still keep doing things that we know aren't good for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so to be patient with ourselves and give ourselves some chance to evolve and extend that same patience to others. Yeah? And just really see, you know, sometimes we know better, but we're just not ready yet to take that step of giving up something we're attached to. Yeah. Or sometimes we've never really thought about it. I was in Mexico once, and I had lunch with two professors at one university who were both professors of ecology. And we were talking about, you know, they were talking about the environment and the change and everything. And then they were telling me how their children came home from school one day and said, "Mom and Dad, how come we're not recycling?" And they said that they had never thought about it. Somehow, although they had given all these talks about the environment, they had never thought that as a family they need to recycle. You know, until their kids mentioned something. So, you know, they weren't people with ill will at all. They just didn't think. And so, you know, we need some patience with ourselves.
I've seen that. I can't think of specific examples now, but people who feel the same, that we need to do more to help the environment, to turn global warming around. And then sometimes you'll see this light bulb go off of, oh, but I hadn't thought that by doing this action it would help. Mm-hmm. They just hadn't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's that little light bulb effect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh? You know, aspect of that compassion and ignorance is, you know, when Henry Ford invented the Model T, he had no way of knowing that polar bears were going to be drowning because everybody was going to think this was a great invention. When we dammed the rivers in the 50s and 60s, they had no idea that the, you know, salmon were going to go extinct. When, you know, the logger is out there, he's cutting the trees because he feels like, you know, we need purpose and stuff. And everything that that these demons have done to destroy the world was done with a good heart and to make life better and to benefit us. And we have benefited from it all. And yet we tend to focus as activists on, you know, the bad aspects of it, and then we blame them for it, even though it wasn't their intention. And, you know, all these CEOs, I mean, yeah, they don't feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants to change, and the problem is that we don't think fast enough to suit our agendas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's an excellent point. I want to repeat it, you know, cause hopefully somebody will listen one day. You know, how you were saying that a lot of the things that we see as major pollutants now, the person who invented them never had the thought or never considered that they would be pollutants or that they would be harmful things. And in fact, these were people who had good motivations and were trying to invent things or do things that would make life easier for us, like inventing the car or damming the rivers or whatever. And how we look at them now and see them as demons, but in actual fact, they were coming from a space of trying to help human beings be more comfortable and live a better life. And they didn't know the long-term effects of their actions.
Mm-hmm. In, as far as species, you know, we're talking about species that are becoming extinct. We talked about that on walk and the polar bears, which is very sad because they look so nice and kind, but they're really quite ferocious. But if you look at the, you know, what we know of time, you know, and what we know, we're just a blip on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And we're evolving as we speak. We are changing and we are becoming extinct.
Mm-hmm.
We that were are becoming extinct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we may evolve and survive, we may not evolve and survive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that brings me back to a centered place in my heart. When I become frustrated with it, I realize that I'm only a small blip in the continuum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so just seeing that in one way, from one perspective, we are just small blips. And as human beings, you know, on this particular planet, we may survive long term, we may not. Okay? You know what's something interesting from a Buddhist viewpoint? We look in the universe and we see there's so much life in so many other, you know, places in the world. You know, there's just so many world systems and so many universes and so many different life forms in all these places. And they all come about dependent on the actions of those beings who were born in those places. So, of course, it depends on the physical system they're born into, but it also depends on beings' karma, whether they're born in one place or another. Okay? And so, from the viewpoint, those polar bears, you know, may die this lifetime, but they will be reborn somewhere in this universe, you know, due to their karma. And in actual fact, their being reborn again and again due to ignorance and karma, that is a much more serious problem than their dying this one life as a polar bear. Because their life as a polar bear, you know, is not going to last forever anyway. Yeah, but their being under the influence of ignorance and afflictive emotions and karma, that's going to keep on going long, 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 long term into the future until they have the opportunity to learn and practice the Dharma. Yeah, and so to really have some kind of big picture like that, we don't use that as an excuse to say, well, it's okay, they can die, they're just going to be reborn, so who cares? No, that's not the proper way to use this teaching. But what I'm saying is that, you know, if we see a bigger picture, there's something actually that's more suffering than the species going extinct in this life. And that is what's happening to those own mind streams that were born there, that are again born under the influence of ignorance because they haven't, you know, heard the Dharma, been able to practice the Dharma. Okay. And then we realize that it's really important, whatever living being that we come in contact with, if we can just even put some imprint of the teachings in their mind so that some lifetime in the future they'll be able to encounter the teachings that talk about ethical conduct and concentration and wisdom, and they'll be able to encounter the teachings that talk about forgiveness and love and compassion and understanding the nature of reality, you know. So then when you know, I was telling you to say mantras so that your trout hear them, you know? And our kitties hear a lot of mantra, and they even chant with us. And they even chant when we're doing silent meditation, you know? But you begin to see that there's lots of ways to be a benefit to others in a long-term perspective in terms of planting seeds of goodness in their mind. Mm-hmm.
I'm really grateful for the tools that I'm taking away, and I'm looking for one more piece.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the judgment, the gratitude that I feel, that's an amazing route for my judgment and mine to take, mm-hmm. and end up in gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that, but I'm wondering where in their responsibility and victim would get woven. Because I know that those are two big movements in our culture. Could you help with that?
Mm. Okay. So the two big movements were victimhood and
responsibility.
Okay. So you say that we were going from judgment, you know, kind of full circle here to gratitude. But where does victimhood fit in, and where does responsibility fit in? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Victimhood. Okay. I think that we make ourselves into victims. Okay? Other people may do harmful things to us, but we're the ones who adopt the victim mentality. And you look through history, you know. And if you look, you know, who did you admire when you were a kid? You know who my first hero was? Was Helen Keller. Mm-hmm. I thought Helen mm-hmm. Keller was fantastic, you know. And I really admired Martin Luther King. And I look at these people, and they had all experienced what nowadays people would say they were victims of this, this, and this. But in their minds, they were not victims. Helen Keller and Martin Luther King and, you know, the resistance in, you know, in World War II, the people who act against adversity, even the adversity in their own life, they do not see themselves as victims. They don't have a victim mentality. Yeah. They may see, okay, there is oppression in the system, or I've been subject to many disadvantages or abuse that other people have not been subject to. But they don't adopt a victim mentality. Okay. Whereas this man at the seminar, whose father didn't take him to the baseball game, he was a victim. And it wasn't because of what his father did. It was the way in which he interacted with his own suffering. Okay. Now, having said that, ordinary, regular human beings, when we experience pain and suffering, we usually make ourselves into victims. And we blame others and we feel sorry for ourselves. Okay? And I've done that a whole lot in my life and it hasn't gotten me anywhere. You know? And, you know, because you can do that. You can blame others and feel sorry for yourself until the cows come home at night. And nothing changes except you get more and more miserable. And so I think here is where we really need that strength of mind that says, okay, I experience that, but I'm going to transform that and use that to fuel my compassion. And I think that's where we get the people that we really admire, you know, who don't give up. Because they're able to take the suffering that they've experienced or take the suffering that they've witnessed and use it to fuel their compassion and use it to fuel their stick-to-itiveness, you know? Yeah, they've gone like this. They've done the 180 degrees.
But what's the key to that?
What's the key? Okay, well, for speaking from a Buddhist perspective, one of the keys is thinking the harm I received was due to my own karma. In other words, my own actions that I created under the influence of self-centered thought at a previous time. So that doesn't mean I need to suffer. It doesn't mean I deserve to suffer. It simply means that my ignorant mind, which was overwhelmed by my own self-centeredness, at some time in the past, made me do something harmful to somebody else with my body, speech, or mind. And now I'm experiencing the result of that. Now, when my mind says, I go, well, have you ever hurt anybody? I ask myself, have you ever hurt anybody? Well, there's a whole litany of people I've hurt in my life. You know? Any of us here has never hurt anybody? You know, come on. Yeah, I mean, we've all done, just, we've hurt other people's feelings, we've trashed them behind their backs, we've, you know, beat them up mentally or physically, we've caused them so many problems in this life and future life because we've been incredibly self-centered. So if I've acted like that in this life, who knows what I did in my previous life? So am I complaining now that I have suffering? If I cause suffering, I mean, this is the law of karma. I receive suffering. Yeah. So it's under the influence of my own mental afflictions, my own self-centered mind that I created, you know, the cause of my own suffering. This other person is a cooperative condition for my suffering. And in the process of being the cooperative condition, they're creating the cause for their own suffering. These people who harm me are going to have a horrible rebirth due to the suffering that they're creating due to their self-centered thought. So what's the sense of me hating them when they're creating the cause for their own misery? I should turn around and look at my own self-centered thought, which is the cause of my own misery, and say, I'm not going to follow you anymore. You know, self-centered thought, you've been cheating me my whole lifetime. Okay. And so not identifying our self-centered thought as us, you know, we are not our self-centered thought. So we don't feel guilty for being selfish, but we realize it as something that is not who we are, but that it afflicts us, and we turn to it and we say, I'm not going to follow you. You're my real enemy. Not those sentient beings who are doing whatever to me. It's the things in my own mind, my own mental afflictions, that are my real enemy, because they're the things that are making me create the karma that makes me find myself in this situation. Okay? So that's one thing. Yeah? Then the second thing is to say, this very same sentient being who in this life is trashing me, is abusing me, is discriminating against me, is destroying my life, at one time has been my mother who's been kind to me. This is not who they are. It is not their essence. They're acting out of ignorance. And they're this very same sentient being at another time, at another place, can be so loving and kind. They are not an inherently existent demon forever and ever. You know, they are overpowered by their ignorance. If I want to have compassion for myself because of I'm overpowered by my ignorance, then the least I could do is also have compassion for other people who are overpowered by their ignorance. Okay? So instead of hating them, instead of framing the situation as they're the oppressor and I'm the victim, you know, let's frame the situation differently. Actually, I'm burning off the karma, because the karma I'm experienced by being, you know, experiencing abuse or oppression right now, that is burning off karma that could have resulted in a horrible rebirth. So actually, I'm the one benefiting. And they're the ones creating the negative karma, so they're the ones who were really deserving of compassion, because they're the ones who are going to suffer more in the future. Does that mean that I just accept my own suffering and don't do anything about it? And say, oh, it's my own karma, so go ahead and oppress me, go ahead and beat me up, go ahead and do this and that? No, it does not mean that. Okay? We still can take actions to correct abuse and oppression and tyranny. And we must do that. You know, we don't just sign out and say, oh, it's all karma. That's ridiculous. Okay, but we do, to keep ourselves from creating a victim mentality, we do use that way of thinking to make our own mind strong and to see exactly who the real enemy is, and it's not the other sentient being. Okay, so when we're doing the social activist work, you're not fighting the enemy of the other sentient beings. You're trying to help people who could be creating a lot of negative karma and bringing a lot of suffering on themselves. Okay? So therefore, you have compassion for both the perpetrator of the harm and the victim of the harm in this life, because in another life, they could have been in completely opposite roles. So you have compassion for everybody in the situation. Because everybody wants to be happy, everybody wants to be free of suffering. And everybody's blinded by their ignorance. Okay? So this whole thing that we've gotten into in our society about victimhood and making identities of being victims, I think that it functions in a way to, in some way, prevent healing. Mm-hmm. You know, Okay. Now, we have to acknowledge, I mean, if somebody has been very severely abused, or, you know, somebody, you know, with oppression, or, you know, whatever, yeah, or, you know, somebody coming back with PTSD, you acknowledge the pain and suffering, and you acknowledge what their experience has been, and that they've gone through suffering. Okay, so you don't shine it on and say, oh, it was nothing. But you help them so that they don't make a victim mentality out of their suffering, and therefore ignore all their own goodness and ignore everything that is going well for them in their life. Yeah, because, you know, we may have been the victim of who knows what, but we also have good things in our life, don't we? And do we ever say, what did I do to deserve that? No, we only say, what did I do to deserve that, when we're miserable. But we should look at what's going on in our life and say, what did I do to deserve this? You know, well, I must have created a whole lot of good karma in a previous life, which means I must have acted with generosity in a previous life. I must have been, you know, kept some kind of ethical conduct in a previous life. I must have been patient and kind and tolerant with others in a previous life. You know, because I'm experiencing goodness in this life now. So therefore, I have to keep acting with those good intentions and good motivations. Okay. But look how much good there is in my life right now.
I was going to ask you if you would give us motivation 2 and 3 before.
Oh, motivation 2 and 3 for waking up in the morning. Yes, we'll use that as a way to conclude. Yeah, okay. So I'll just do that very briefly. So first thing, you know, when you wake up in the morning, most important thing is not to harm anybody. Okay. Second thing when you wake up in the morning, most important thing is to be a benefit in whatever big or small way we can. Okay. Third most important thing is to hold that long-term view of working for the benefit of all sentient beings, no matter how long it takes. Yeah. In a Buddhist viewpoint, we call it bodhicitta, and so we're trying to become Buddhas to be able to best benefit sentient beings. If you do it in an activist way, it's you just hanging in with sentient beings, you know, no matter what's going on. And you do what you're capable of doing at any moment, and don't fret about what you're not capable of doing. You can't save the world. It's okay. You know? It's like, why are we beating ourselves up? Because we can't save the world. I mean, Jesus couldn't save the world. You know? He couldn't save it. You know, even if you believe that theology, that he died on the cross for our benefit, look what we're doing now. You know, nobody can save this world. So, you know, why get discouraged? Because you can't save it. Do the little bit you can to make it a better place. And work on your own mind to make it a better place. And have that long-term view. Okay. So we talked right through our break time. Why don't we just sit quietly right now and do a little bit of meditation, and then we'll just dedicate for the whole morning and stuff a little early.